Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands Podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. All
right. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. So today we're going to be doing an introduction to gaming. So this is where we actually explain basically what is a RPG or a role-playing game. And I should say pen and paper role-playing game, you know, the classic, you know, the Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
As opposed to a computer one, which...
Yeah.
I don't really consider an RPG, but we'll get to
that
later.
Ooh, we're going to have some clash on this.
Geek clash, I guess. Clash light.
Clash of the geeks.
All right, where do we start off?
Well, I guess explaining why, like, a gaming podcast would actually do something that's introduction to gaming when you would think that the target audience are people that are somewhat familiar with...
the game already.
Yeah
the games and RPGs in general, role-playing games in general. But as we found out, no. Some of our audience are people, you know, shut-ins, perhaps.
I'd say most of our audience, since our audience
are shut-ins.
No, that's not what I was going to say. All right.
At least I am.
Well, we call them friends. But to you, we're going to call them shut-ins. Are just warmed by the sound of human contact, however fleeting. And are just finding some of the terms that we're throwing out somewhat incomprehensible. So the one person, who is not a shut-in, requested that we...
Well, he suggested. He didn't request.
Did I say suggested or requested?
You said requested. I think he suggested.
Does it matter?
No.
Whatever. So, okay. So.
And he suggested what, Wayne?
What you just said. He suggested that we do an intro to gaming podcast and kind of explain what we do.
Okay.
I think he also requests that our intros be a little smoother, so maybe for next episode. We'll...
One request at a time. One request at a time.
Can't put a request on to argue semantics so much.
You're the one who can argue semantics about reductionist last one.
And you see, now you're just wasting more time.
So I know I mentioned Clash of the Titans last episode, but I hadn't actually seen it, and I was complaining about it. So I finally seen it.
Congratulations.
Or not.
So did it live up to your low expectations?
It's actually all right. I think probably when they were casting Perseus, they probably should have went with their second choice, a block of wood. Perhaps could have brought a little bit more to the role than Sam Worthington did.
But... I'm sure they would have gotten the block of wood to at least wear an appropriate wig.
Yeah, and it just reinforced my point about the hair, the short hair, because everybody else in the world, from the gods to the mortals, have long hair. Mm. And he's got this brush cut. And you can't say, oh, because he's a fisherman, because his dad had long hair.
Do fishermen have short hair cuts regularly?
Not to my knowledge. Okay. But you couldn't, even if they did, you couldn't say that. Because apparently Greek fishermen back in the day, they had long hair. So it's not a real big spoiler, but they're riding a giant scorpions. And I thought, oh, that's kind of cool.
Especially how they keep getting bigger.
Yeah,
I remember that. But just because of the CG, you don't really notice that they're bigger. It's just like
the flashy camera angles flying all over the place.
And yeah, it's like, oh, is it bigger? Anyway, we can't defeat that one because it's bigger. Was it? But anyway, so they're riding on these giant scorpions, and I was thinking, man, that would be cool, you know, to ride on a giant scorpion.
I agree.
Now, unfortunately, I can't ride on a giant scorpion. So I guess I'll have to do the next best thing is... pretend to ride on a giant scorpion sitting around a table with my friends playing a role-playing game.
So, you're selling this like nothing else, man.
I might have a better one later on, but in terms of selling it.
Better than giant scorpions. I don't believe it.
That's pretty hard.
So I saw him kissing Jessica Alba in the movie, and I thought, that'd be pretty cool. But I didn't kiss Jessica Alba. I pretended to. Sitting around a table with my friends, rolling dice.
All guys. That's not where I was going, but anyway.
But that kind of gets into why some people play. But first, before we get more into the mindset, however disturbing.
God, I kiss Jessica Alba.
I'm going to turn it over to Wayne. perhaps a little too late.
Because he obviously can't do any worse than that.
You'd be surprised. All right. So,
and let's hit down, like, what is a role-playing game and the concept.
Cool.
So, Wayne, take it away.
I I thought it was the chair, and you stole my question. All right, so I'll go first then. Basically, I would call a role-playing game a collective storytelling game, in that the players kind of and the people playing the game work together to tell a story. It's a little bit of improvisational acting with a little rules. It's essentially you're playing Let's Play Make Believe, like you did when you were a kid.
I'd agree with that. You're a bunch of people coming together, playing Make Believe or telling a story. Yeah. If that sounds more sophisticated, except you're bound by a set of rules that's kind of codified. Everybody, I mean, they're in these books, so, and everybody knows what the rules are. So there's no, like when you played guns as a kid, there's no dispute whether or not you shot him. Right. Basically, you've established a set of rules to determine, yes, I did shot him. I did shoot him.
Yeah, and that's how I explained it to some of the guys at work, because they always see me with the big books, and they say, what do you do? And I say, it's an RPG, and they're like, what's that? So I've had to explain this several times, and yeah, that's why I pare it down to it. It's make-believe with rules.
Do you find that when you have to explain it to your friends that they immediately assume when you say RPG that you're talking about a computer game like Neverwinter Nights or an online game like World of Warcraft?
I guess maybe some of the younger guys or newer guys probably might assume that. Maybe some of the older guys just are completely clueless.
Out of curiosity, where are these guys from?
The guy I talked to most, one's from Canada, another guy's from Australia.
The reason I ask is because I can't remember the last time somebody didn't know what, like, D&D was.
Really? You'd be surprised. D&D is, I guess, I thought it was a fairly common name, but a fair number of people, even at my workplace, one guy said, D&D, what's that?
Yeah. Well, D&D is like what Kleenex is to tissue. I mean,
what I assume, right.
It's so well known that it actually becomes the word for pen and paper role playing games. Yeah. Like to say, oh, do you play D&D? Yeah, I play one there where you go up into space or something.
Yeah.
Spelljammers? No, sorry.
Yeah, that's why I was quite surprised when he actually asked, what is D&D? And I honestly didn't know.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but that, have you had to explain it to someone else? And if so, how did you?
Aside from a Japanese person, no.
Really?
But at work, all of the people, not all, but the vast majority are Americans, and everyone either has played in the past or knows about it, so yes. But to a Japanese person, then yes, I give that pretty much that same explanation as it's me and friends sitting around telling a story with each other with rules and such. Mm. And then they kind of nod their heads and say, oh, that's nice, and go back to whatever they're doing.
With the exception is, as I said, I find that I first have to clarify that I'm not talking about computer-based games.
Yeah. Yeah, Final Fantasy is big here. Like, in Japanese, RPG is for RPG. That is a big genre. Pen and paper doesn't really seem to be. I haven't met another Japanese person who plays, well, not counting Yujiro, but yeah.
I saw someone, they had a D&D day down in the a local hobby store.
That's right. Yeah. Is that the one in Denden?
Yeah.
So I know that they're out there. I've just never met one.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised because,
They looked like people you would find in any in a game shop back in North America.
Cool.
There was some plaid and stuff.
Some gamer fun.
More plaid was worn in that one room than I've seen in the years of Japan. Yeah, now I'm looking at you, Chris.
All right, we've kind of discussed that. So, what does a player do, or what are the people that?
Different positions around the table.
The different positions around the table.
Okay. Well, you said one there. There's the player, obviously, and then there's the master.
The game master.
Yeah, it goes through various names like dungeon master, game master, storyteller, referee.
I've heard referee.
Yeah. It's all pretty much the same job. And that's the person who, I suppose referee is probably the cleanest definition, and he's the person who goes through the rule sets, makes decisions on different rule disputes, etc.
Yeah, so referee sounds pretty good. So usually there's, I guess, one referee. And then the other people, the players.
Right.
So what exactly do...
If I had to explain it, I would probably use a movie analogy, however accurate it is, and it would be the players are all of the main actors, the ones that are either above the movie title or just below the movie title. Those are the players.
Yeah.
And the game master, kind of jump in there,
because
it's everything else. The game master is the kind of the director, but he's... He or she is also all of the secondary characters, the ones that have speaking parts or cameos, the bad guy, even if the bad guy is above the title, sorry, I should say, that will not be a player. That will be controlled by the game master.
I've pretty much explained it the same way.
you know, either use like a book or a movie analogy, and you say, you know, the players are the main characters of the story.
Yeah. Though it varies from game to game. Like, often the game master will create a story or some... they'll create the world, the setting of the story, regardless.
Yeah, but I mean, like, before even getting into story, I mean, like, what are the players... They're the main characters.
Right. I was going to contrast it to the players then taking roles of characters within that setting.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I would also say they're, like, the set director, the special effects guy, sort of cinematographer, because they pretty much run and control everything that is not the player's character, including weather and other sort of
usually,
natural
yes,
events.
But not always.
Not always.
As lame as it sounds, that people have described them as God.
Yeah, yeah, that's a one I like to say myself.
which is one I wouldn't say describe myself as when I'm doing that. I prefer just game master. But
well, not
yeah,
when I game master, but every time else, yes.
Away from the table, you can call me God. At the table, no.
I'm just one of you guys.
What are you mortals?
But it kind of gets into whose story is it? Because is the game master the author of the story?
Yeah. Easy answer, yes and no.
Well, that's not an easy answer. A yes and no is not an easy answer.
Nothing easy about that.
Easy answer, yes, but you know, right, then you get it.
Yes. But for a more difficult answer, no. So usually the referee comes up with the basic idea of the story.
Right.
And they present it to the players, usually. But then the players have a lot of input as to what happens in the story, because unlike a writer or someone writing a movie, you know, the referee doesn't have control over his main characters. His main characters are controlled by a player each, and those players can do whatever they want, so they have a big effect on the story. So it goes back to that collaborative storytelling. It's a bunch of people working together to tell a story.
Yeah, and there's a few different modes to that. This might be something that we want to get in later on, but there's what's called sandbox style, in which all people equally contribute to the story. It's not something originally designed by the game master. Or there's, what did you call it?
A ball of twine.
Ball of twine, which is more linear, in which usually the master designs a story for the players to...
Yeah, and the players are just basically following this ball of twine to the plot points that the game master's laid out.
Yeah.
Whereas I guess that there is a more open style where there's probably just a rough story outline and a world. And the game master is like, okay, here's your world. What do you want to do with it?
So, speaking of settings and genres, we mentioned the classic D&D, which everybody kind of should know, which is fantasy, but you know, there are other games.
Yes, there are lots of other games. There are hundreds of other games, in fact.
What else? Probably, like, if you look at it from a genre perspective, they run a pretty good gamut. But I guess like the different genres you would find at your local video store or whatever, or on Netflix, now that video stores are going out of business. You have, like, science fiction, you have fantasy, you have superhero.
Horror.
Like you said, anything you can imagine, really. There's
supernatural. But probably you don't have, you find things like romance. You wouldn't find that. Or romantic comedy.
Comedy is very rare.
Things that, I guess you would say, that are more stereotypically like a female movie genre, you tend not to find in a role-playing game. But then again, it's kind of hard to, like, what kind of story would you tell? Because people want some sort of action in all these role-playing games, whether there's a lot of talking or little talking. It's all about conflict and things like that. And comedy, although there have been some comedic games, they were kind of comedic science fiction game or comedic fantasy game. Just because of pure comedy, that would, I mean...
Yeah, how
would
you
do that? Yeah. So anything that's whether you see like an action that's action related, there is a game out there probably, and some of them have been based right off the game, such as the Matrix game or or a Buffy or Serenity.
Yeah,
I guess it goes the other way too. I mean, it wasn't a good movie, but you had the D&D movie, which was crap.
That's a horrible, horrible thing.
Yeah. So,
obviously the big one being D&D. Why is fantasy? It's fantasy. Why is that the big one? Why is it so popular?
Well, that's the... I mean, it's probably not That's where the roots are.
Yeah.
That's how it all started, from fantasy. In the 70s, that was... Fantasies was quite popular.
Yeah, mostly based off of Tolkien, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tolkien, absolutely. But why is it still popular? I think it's kind of easy, because when you're looking, we talk about a group of people sitting around a table, mm-hmm. and just the way we think, and when you read fantasy novels and or look at a fantasy movie, it tends to be a group of adventurers, mm-hmm. or a group of people coming together to defeat a great evil, mm-hmm. or to go on some sort of quest. So yeah. People can really imagine a group of people sitting around a table doing mm-hmm. something.
Yeah, like you said, it started from Tolkien, and you look at the Tolkien books, it's, you know, the nine heroes all working together to, you know, overcome a horrendous evil.
And that'd be a huge gaming group, by the way.
That would be a huge gaming group. I wouldn't recommend that. But, yeah, then you look at, like, other stories where, like, for example, you said The Matrix, and, yeah, it's a group of people, but they're not all equally as important as Neo, so...
Well, a lot of movies, yeah, you have one protagonist.
Right,
We're going to do a hard-boiled adventure in the near future, and film noir and hard-boiled novels tend to have a single protagonist. Yeah. So it is a challenge to try to get a group of people together, and we're pretty much limited to about three people.
Mm. Yeah.
If you look at L.A. Confidential, you're looking at three protagonists.
Yeah. Mm. Well, same thing with the pulp game that we're doing now. We're playing one in the pulp genre, and we have one guy who's slated as the man.
Yeah, that's true. So
even though my character is obviously the main protagonist.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. You can adapt.
You can laugh at that. It's okay.
You can adapt stories, but obviously I think the point is some are more difficult than others, and fantasy is the easiest one to do, so that's probably why it's so common.
Now, just to contradict myself,
okay, yeah.
Which I tend to do a lot.
As well as other people, but...
But, you know, but I acknowledge it. superhero teams are quite popular.
Very true. Very true.
And there's a bit of a revival. Superhero games come and go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they wax and wane in popularity, whereas fantasy has been fairly consistent.
I know it's a little off topic, but what do you think is the second most...
Could I finish my point before we go off topic?
Well, all right.
So I'm a little bit puzzled. Right now, superhero games are experiencing a bit of resurgence through like Mutants and Masterminds. And they've the same company has got the DC license to do DC Heroes. So, but I'm always been curious why you can't get as many people interested in a superhero game. Why, what do you guys think? Because I obviously am more interested in superhero games than you two. Why aren't you as interested in superheroes as, say, fantasy?
Personally, I guess it's because I wasn't just into superheroes. I kind of, I don't know, I actually thought they were a little bit boring when I was kind of growing up.
Because right.
the classic guys are Superman or Batman. And my experience, they could kind of do everything, and it didn't seem like much of a challenge for them. So
it
seemed kind of boring, right? But I guess going back to fantasy, sort of why it's maybe more popular than superheroes is, even with superheroes, you kind of have to, things still kind of work in the real world. You know, Batman is still set in Gotham City in whatever time period he's, I'm surprised I knew that one.
No, I'm surprised that, because Gotham's not a real city. But.
Well, whatever.
It's a fictional take on New York.
Okay, fair enough. The point is, it's kind of set during a real time period. And things still have to work kind of the way they do in real life. Whereas a fantasy setting, mm-hmm. you can pretty much just drop in anything you want and say, this is the way the world works, there you go.
So that sense of freedom, then,
yes.
is why perhaps fantasy is more popular.
Oh, yeah, and it gets back to it's easier. Hey, you want to play that character? Yeah, he's there. You want to play that race? Yeah, it's there. You want to have magic? Yeah, that's there.
But I don't think any of those limitations are on superhero games. I mean, there's magic and there's alien races in those as well.
I would disagree, but kind of like outside of that, I mean, you're the kind of the base of operation, so to speak, is still the real world. You know, like if you play like a superhero game in, I don't know, modern era, mm-hmm. you're still a real country in whatever current year it is, and outside of the superhero powers, that still has to feel real. Where a fantasy world, you could kind of take a bunch of disparate elements, chuck them all together, and cobble some kind of world out of it. I mean, I'm not saying you couldn't play superheroes in a fantasy world, but it would just feel more like fantasy.
Well, you feel like magic,
yeah,
like
exactly.
wizards. Like
I'd argue that D&D is superheroes in a fantasy setting.
Oh, well, yeah, the most recent edition, certainly,
yeah.
but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So you had a topic you wanted to go off? I think you've done the topic now. You wanted to go off?
Actually, yeah. Just what do you guys think is the second most popular genre, second to fantasy?
I heard that the World of Darkness is the second biggest market share.
Which sounds like, which makes
and
sense.
And that's a supernatural setting. Mm-hmm. They have vampire. You actually play vampires. You actually play werewolves. You actually play ghosts. Mages and ghosts and fairies. Or you can play the people that hunt them down. Mm-hmm. So it could actually be like the TV series, Supernatural.
Yeah.
Or it could be like True Blood or Twilight.
Ooh, I suppose. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
But I suppose, I don't know if it needs to be said with the name being World of Darkness as well, but it's a very dark setting.
Too. Oh, yeah.
And it's a world.
Oh, God.
Of.
Yeah, I was trying to work that in. The
of. Darkness.
But, yeah, compared to Dungeons & Dragons, it's very dark and dangerous. And
yeah, like the
things might not turn out all right at the end of the story.
Not necessarily. I mean, there are settings of Dungeons & Dragons, like Ravenloft was the horror, doing hand quotes now, but setting in D&D, which was, but D&D in general, yeah, it's much more heroic kind of thing.
And yeah, so I've heard that they're, I mean, they've said that they're the second biggest genre, and I'll tend to buy
share,
that.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, like market share. Yeah.
And I would also buy that just because it's a very different approach to the style of games, and maybe you could even take the World of Darkness games and the D&D games as kind of the opposite ends of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. Somewhat. I mean, people can argue something is even more out there.
Yeah.
But basically, one is very much a kind of a game style. You do things to get and level up. You increase your levels and things like that. And the other is supposed to be you're supposed to be telling a story and exploring yourself.
Okay, so having said that, do you want to talk about what exactly is a system? Because you've set up these two.
No, that's a good point, Wayne. So maybe we should cover the common terms that we're throwing about.
Very naturally put, too.
All right. So, I guess...
For example?
Well, one of the guys running one of our World of Darkness games, system is, as you said in the beginning, the kind of shared sort of...
So what's the term you're talking about?
System.
System.
I'm talking about system, because I thought we should do that one first. It's the rules that everyone at the table has agreed that kind of the world works under.
Okay, and can you give us an example of one of these rules?
The classic. So you roll a die. If you get over a number, you hit the guy you were trying to hit with your sword. You roll under a number, you miss.
Great.
And I think all the books that you buy will either be connected to a system sold in the stores, or actually has the rules set or the system in the book.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that I think that's really good, because when people talk about system, and that's basically what people are going out and buying. They're buying these systems, because then everybody's on literally the same page when you're talking about what do you need to do to hit something with the gun? What do you need? How can I convince this guy? Well, you have this skill and you need to roll this number, and then you convince them. If you don't, then the person's going to think you're lying.
Right. Yeah, kind of getting back to the playing make-believe. You know, the classic, I shot you. No, you didn't. Yeah, the system is what determines whether your character's actions succeed or fail.
It's not just combat. You
oh, no,
gave,
no.
Examples of that as well, but you
I'm
can
convincing.
Go...
Yeah, yeah.
I'm convincing you you're dead.
Man, that would be an awesome power.
I shot you. No, you didn't. Let me roll to see if I convince you that I shot you. No, but just to say that it can cover almost any situation imaginable. Like, you can
go
into social interaction, mental interaction. Like, you can have roles to see if your character remembers something, like a clue that the game master wants you to remember or not. Or it could go the other way. There are systems that are very light on these kinds of rules, to where, depending on the situation or the strategy, you don't use mental or social rules. You would only use from combat, or even more without combat rules.
And that's a good point, because, you know, you're a group of people, and people want to play these different roles. They might want to play a doctor, but they don't really know. Have a lot of that doesn't mean you have to go to medical school in order to play a doctor on the weekends. So you would have something, a medicine. Can you just make a roll to see if you're able to, you know, do that surgery and that? You don't necessarily have to come with all this knowledge and then explain how you would perform open heart surgery.
Right.
Just make that roll.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was last thing on setting was, or system. Systems usually tend towards either being very sort of simulating reality, or an attempt to simulate reality, or with a lot of rules that try and cover a lot of situations, or you have a more general sort of
abstract
system where the referee can interpret the rules as he sees sort of, or she sees fit, where so you kind of got the open sort of loose sort of focus more on story, then you have sort of the tighter, more dense kind of focus on reality.
Yeah. And again, D&D and World of Darkness are very good examples of the contrast between those. D&D is very rules heavy, especially when you get into a combat system.
I agree. I was just thinking.
Yeah, funny way of showing. Yeah, funny way of showing.
I was going to say. I actually think World of Darkness maybe comes closer to trying to simulate reality.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Rather than sort of the over, not over the top heroic nature, but D&D has a lot of rules.
Yeah, it's
but
rules heavy. Not necessarily realistic.
It's rules
realistic.
Heavy. Yeah, not necessarily realistic. And I mean, we're talking about a game with vampires, so it's not that realistic. But disagree.
I'm just listening to all the people that were losing.
All right, fine. Okay.
You're explaining system and defining it. Now you're going into like rules that they've never seen or whatever.
All right, fine.
Yeah, but yeah, there's some are very rules heavy because they want to cover all the bases, and some are very rules light because they allow more open interpretation of what rules they have, what they can cover.
So you said people also might buy a book that's attached to a system, but not necessarily have a system in it, would be what?
I'd say on the one hand you have system, which is the rules, and then on the other you have setting, which is where you're going to play.
You don't mean the room.
Yeah, and I don't mean the room table. Per se.
By setting, I think he means setting.
Okay. So you could be playing a Star Wars game. Obviously, the setting is the Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. Some books that you buy will have no setting at all. Mm-hmm. They just provide a set of rules. So they provide a system for you to imagine anything that you want. A good example is GURPS.
Yeah, Savage Worlds.
Savage Worlds is the new guy on the market.
Yeah.
And then they would release a series of books that will provide settings in which you can use their rule set. But of course, you can just use your imagination and not buy the setting. Some books will actually have the setting right in the book. Again, another newcomers are the ones that are using the Warhammer 40,000 universe and like Death Watch.
Yeah.
And,
Dresden Files.
Dresden Files is another example where they release the book with the set of rules plus the setting in it. And sometimes the system can be shared among a number of these books, number of different settings.
Yeah. Well, for example, like the World of Darkness.
Yeah. It's all by the same company, though. I was going to say, because sometimes you even have like a setting book that has no system in it.
Yeah.
And it's specifically designed like, hey, here's a setting, and just kind of
throw in whatever you like.
Yeah. Or not even throw in whatever you like, but use whatever system you like to sort of tell the story of this setting, whatever world this is. So it's sort of called like a universal sort of setting. They're designed to be used with any kind of system. You said you can sort of imagine anything you want or create your own sort of setting, which I guess would be called a homebrew.
Yeah. So some people have like a homebrew setting or even a homebrew system. And when they're using homebrew, it means just like you're still in the backyard. I don't know, did homebrew beer ever become popular in the States? It was pretty big when I was in university.
I know a couple of guys here who do it, actually. They actually import stuff from the States.
And it's pretty dreadful. Yeah. But
I know a guy who makes sake in his bathtub, too. That's some strong stuff.
Wow. But as you can imagine, the homebrew is what you meant. The people just make their own setting. And sometimes they'll just cobble it together.
Yeah.
From different sources and things like that. But basically what they're saying when they're saying homebrew is it's not necessarily what you find in the books that you buy in the bookstore or on Amazon.
Yeah, and I don't think I've ever actually played in a campaign where the setting is really used as is. There's always been some kind of special house rules or something added in.
Also, you could even create a homebrew system. You know, try and come up with your own rule set
as opposed to some people setting.
And as Lyle said, kind of the good alcohol analogy, usually they're pretty dreadful.
I think that, usually, because the person's not, unless they don't have a job and they're able to focus on making and playtesting this game, this set of rules, it doesn't really match up to the professionals. But another problem with that is that one good thing about, you know, buying a system in a book is that everybody can buy that book, and then everybody knows what the system is. And even if you make some changes or the house rules, as Chris said, you don't want to have too many house rules because then people get confused.
Yeah, yeah.
And people can't go home and go, oh, I want to do this, and they read it in the book and that. It doesn't matter if they're, you know, what they're playing is not in the book, but at least the rules are, and they can kind of confer, and you can see what's fair and not fair.
Yeah, and that's kind of the whole point of the setting, or the sorry, the system, to make sure things are resolved fairly.
Now, once you have you've decided on your system and your setting and that, you play a game. Probably the most common is playing what we call a campaign. And a campaign is basically you get together for a number of sessions and you tell that one story. Mm-hmm. But instead of saying, I don't know why we don't just say, but let's get together to tell our story. we say, let's get together to play our campaign.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that probably harkens back to the fantasy roots in that it was kind of like a quest. Well, then why don't we call it quest? I don't know. But if something like you have to accomplish something, so it's a...
Probably has to do with, from the military term, a campaign. D&D was based off of a miniature war game.
Oh, okay. All right. I was almost that. There. Yeah.
Almost, but no cigar. So, yeah, I guess the campaign is sort of like a continuing story arc that has the same characters kind of traveling.
Or links a series of stories.
Yeah, or links a series of stories together. Maybe different characters. I would say usually the same. And those can go on for quite a long time.
Yeah, we just finished a two-year-long one.
Oh, yeah, and you hear other people talk about like 3 or 4, even like 5 years with kind of the same characters and evolving over the story.
Oh, yeah.
And then, I guess the opposite of that would be a one-shot adventure where the story is designed to wrap up in a single session.
Three or four hours. At a minimum.
Yeah, yeah.
For people who haven't played, I would say that if you look at, especially the recent TV series, have really embraced this, like Battlestar Galactica, or 24, even though it's set in one day, or Lost, is they're telling a long story over the series of different seasons, and that would be a campaign. It would be a better analogy than a movie, where they're telling a very, very tight story within a short period of time. This is like you watch a little bit of the story, or you play a little bit of the story 1 week, and then next week you come together again to tell a little bit more of it, and a little bit more, a little bit more. And sometimes mini stories can wrap up within these seasons. But basically, the idea is you're going to have some big ending, which hopefully
doesn't
suck. No, but I think that's a good analogy. Yeah, like a movie, you know, would be a one shot in that you tell one story in a set amount of time. Yeah, and then the continuing TV series would be a campaign.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good analogy. So the big question then, why do you play these games?
Can you not read your own notes?
All right.
I'm reading your handwriting better than you are.
Type this shit out, man.
All right, sorry.
Oh, no, actually, that is your notes.
That is my notes.
Oh, okay. Oh, you wrote your notes wrong. Okay.
Okay, fine. I wrote my notes wrong.
Anyway,
so what is the correct question, Mr. Chair?
No, let's just do the question that you chose, Chairman. Why do I role play?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, and I touched on it in the beginning. It's like when I read a book or I watch a movie, and not all of them are as bad as Clash of the Titans, but when I it's a feeling that you want to do more than just passively participate in that world. Mm-hmm. You think, that is so cool. What would I do in that situation or a similar situation? I want to do that. And I guess some people have used that to become very rich actors or directors and that. And I've not chosen that path. I've chosen the path to play games on a semi-weekly basis and to tell these different stories and to actively participate in these stories with my friends. So that's why I play. Yeah.
No, I think that's a pretty good, point. Because who hasn't sort of watched a movie and said, I want to try that, or, oh, why did that guy do that? I could do that better.
Yeah.
Or, you know the classic, like, I'm not a big zombie fan, but the zombie movies I've watched, I'm like, could I survive that? I don't know. And, playing a role-playing game gives you a chance.
And nobody rides a scorpion like you do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they throw me as a king scorpion rider. But, anyways, playing a game, a role-playing game, gives you a chance to do
that. I'm glad you took my joke and fell with it.
Yeah. I'm good at doing that.
I like making stories. I suppose like it is telling stories together as well. But like I know it's really lame, but I actually enjoy reading the setting books from different systems. And when I do it, I just think of like, oh, this would be a really cool story or a cool plot line or something like that. I just love doing that.
Right. Okay.
No, I
how about you, Wayne?
There's some of that too. There's just so much. Sounds lame. Cool stuff in some of the setting books. You're like, what would happen if this was real, or I'd like to explore that, mm-hmm. or I'd like to tell a story about that. That's a really good story. But also, I mean, it is a role playing game. You're playing a character, and sort of similar to what Lyle said, it gives you a chance to do stuff or you wouldn't normally do. Mm-hmm. And I mean, joke all you want, or
sit in a chair, eat pizza. No,
all right. But
my wife doesn't let me.
Yeah, exactly.
No, because you're actually doing that. But I think you summed it up a lot better. Yeah, who hasn't read a book and said, "I would like to be that character."
Yeah, and it's like if you enjoy reading as a passive thing, this is kind of like an active version of it.
Yeah. Which is kind of
really proud of that.
Yeah, kind of funny. You remember those choose your own adventure books? I mean, that would be like a midway point between a passive book and actually a role-playing game.
Absolutely.
You read it, and then you get to make a couple of choices, flip to the appropriate page, read what happens to you.
Are those still around?
No, they're not.
Can I do one that is still more timely?
Okay, fine.
It's actually like the computer games that you're playing that profess to be role-playing games. Mm-hmm. But they're very, very controlled and constricted because everything has to be programmed.
Yeah.
Even Grand Theft Auto, which is reportedly supposed to be a very open style of game, is still confined by what programs are in there.
Yeah. There's only a given set of missions, and they'll always be the same.
Yeah. So even that's a halfway point in that. Mm-hmm. If you really just want to, be very creative, like have a lot of input into the world, or really affect things, or really go off the page, if you will, then a pen and paper role-playing game is where I think what you need to do.
Yeah.
And or, like I said, become a millionaire by acting and making movies.
I think that raises a good point about kind of going back to the storyteller or the referee.
Yeah.
That's sort of why you have a referee, because in a computer game, you can only do what has been programmed into that game. Those are the parameters that you have to function in.
So the referee is like the game developer, except they're developing it as we go.
Yeah, okay. I'll go with that.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right?
That's all right, yeah.
I just came up with that.
But, So having a human referee kind of allows the players to pretty much do anything they can think of. Unless you have me as a storyteller, then I just say no.
Yeah.
Look, a good referee would just say yes.
But that's our motivations, and probably like the motivations of the three of us, and probably why we like to play together is because we have similar motivations. Yeah. But some people have taken the time to kind of codify
why people
play the game, and they've come upon three different classifications. One's the dramatist, the other is the gamist, and the other is the simulationist. And that could be like the style of game as well, basically. As well as the player. The gamist is they want to play a game. They want to win. They're looking for ways to win, and this is just another game to play. Another way to win. The dramatist, they want to tell a story. The simulationist is they want to interact in a world or simulate. They can't go out into outer space, so they want to imagine what it's like in outer space. So it's not so much the story, but it's
more the experience.
Yeah, simulating that experience, firing a gun.
What would it be like to be in space? Or
or to be a hard-boiled detective killing people, or not killing people, but solving crimes.
Did you really
watch The Noir? Yeah, did I actually know what I'm talking about?
Wore a red bandana. And Humphrey Bogart was awesome.
Oh, sorry, that's Rambo. Yeah. He's not hard-boiled.
Rambo Noir.
So I would say out of those three classifications, I lean more to the dramatist. I want to tell a story.
Yeah.
Although I think when I said I want to ride giant scorpions, that gives me a splash of simulations. Or kiss Jessica, because I don't care what the story is. I'm just how I got to that point doesn't matter. I just want to simulate it.
Those are fun games where you sit in the corner, close your eyes, start going, mm.
Put the hand in the back.
Hugging yourself.
Like at a Happy Days or something.
That's what the rest of us go out and get pizza.
So how about you, Chris, if you had to choose one of those 3 points kind of on this triangular axis, which one would it?
Dramatist.
Dramatist.
Yeah, like I said, I like telling stories.
Yeah.
I was going to say, maybe I'm wrong, I think I kind of started out younger as a gamist.
You know, I can see that.
Like when
you played a lot of the game Magic.
Yeah, a lot of
the
Magic.
Card game. Yeah.
So kind of running stories and things like that, I would say, oh, well, things have to be fair and balanced. Mm-hmm. And, oh, well, I can't put that in the story because it's either too strong or too weak. But kind of like it then, as I evolved as kind of a player, I became more of a dramatist, mm-hmm. where it kind of is it more powerful or does it fit the story? Yeah, fitting the story is much more important than being fair.
Yeah, and I'd say like the one campaign you're currently running is very dramatic. It's
and that's specifically why I chose it, to kind of go that direction.
But, now, somebody's recommended and I don't know who this person is, but I agree with it, is they recommended a fourth kind of motivation for playing role-playing games, and that was basically just to socialize.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of gets to it, and this is just a belief. I don't have any scientific studies to back this up, but I think that men, less so than women, like to have something in front of them when they get together and socialize and talk.
I totally agree. Yeah, I totally agree.
So it's you want to come over and help me build my deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you chat, and it's like, oh, you know.
You
want to play cards, like poker, or things like that.
Playing poker is not about the actual playing well. I know,
but you don't really phone somebody up and go, do you want to go out for a coffee and talk? Or, oh, I really need somebody to talk to right now. Do you want to meet? And you'd be like, oh... Well, you can play a board game while we're doing it.
Yeah, all right.
Or
a more manly version.
Oh, okay. Cool. It's your... Okay, when Yujiro finishes your turn...
you can have a whole discussion.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. No, I was thinking the more manly version. Yeah, the game's on. Come on over and watch the game.
But as in a sports game.
As in a sports game, yeah.
And you're watching it and you're talking. And I think role-playing games... Yeah, it's just another avenue to do that. If you're not interested in sports, which... A lot of people tend not to be who play role-playing games.
I would agree with that. That's
a generalization. Generalization.
Yeah. That's kind of how I've explained it to my girlfriend. I'm like, this is kind of how I socialize. These are how I interact with my friends. That's what I do.
I need to bring books.
I need to bring books and dice.
I need to buy more books.
I need to buy more books. And no, those books are not getting thrown away after we get married and moving together.
Now, why women play role-playing games, I don't know.
I can't imagine a reason.
So they must obviously fall into the other 3 motivations.
Actually, you said that with your girlfriend. My girlfriend, and I think your wife as well, said, was it, whenever we play the game, they always ask, did you win?
Did you win? That's kind of leads into some common questions that we get from the people around us. And one of them is, did you win, or how do you win? And
like,
I was...
Did you win?
Did you win? And I initially tried to explain. No, role-playing games aren't really like that. You know, you don't really win.
And then you got the...
And then I just got tired, and I just kept saying, yes. So after a while, my wife said, don't Chris and Wayne get tired of you always winning? Now, if you didn't laugh at that joke, here's why. I'm going to explain that you don't... A role-playing game isn't really about winning. Now, people who are gamists or approach it from a gamist perspective might argue that, no, it is about winning. You do accomplish things, so you do win things. And I suppose so, but what I mean by you don't win is you don't win in an adversarial way. Mm-hmm. It's not you versus... It's not the players versus the referee or the game master.
No matter how often it might seem that way.
Yeah, no matter how...
It's not the players versus the player as often as that comes up.
Or the players versus the player, although that does happen.
Yes.
So even though the game master is controlling the villain or the villains in the world, the idea is basically that the players are going to win. The protagonist is going to win. Just like in a movie, even though James Bond is going to get into trouble, you'd never really expect Goldfinger to triumph in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it is when you play the game. It's how you. It's basically how is that story told? How does everybody at the table win, so to speak?
It is the journey, not the destination.
Well, yeah.
We've sounded like Special Olympics of gaming. It's everybody's a winner.
No,
what a gamist do then? Like you said before, that they play to win. So how do they do that then?
They try to make their characters as powerful as possible. And I think they focus it from that perspective.
Well, that's, I think that's different, though. That's more of a power gamer.
Well, but I'm sure...
Which is another in-game term.
I'm sure the gamest person sort of sets goals
Chris
for themselves.
For introducing that.
You know? Oh, I'm sorry. Another vocabulary word.
Yeah, bust out the dictionary again. No, I think the gamest character... They set goals for themselves, sort of, in the story. And
I'm gonna have to describe. Because I think everybody sets goals for themselves, but... I think
a lot of the game systems, especially the more popular ones, contain a way of advancement where your character gains skills and powers and
experience
mm-hmm. or cool stuff like a new sword or a new set of armor, a new machine gun, whatever. A gamist might be interested in collecting those or advancing his character along those lines.
When I said set goals, I should have said sort of much more immediate goals, such as beating that guy in this fight or, I don't know. So,
So I guess the short answer is you don't really win.
You don't win in a traditional sense.
In a traditional sense, such as a board game or chess or a first-person shooter. Mm-hmm. But what you do is you kind of gain what most game systems identify as experience. Mm-hmm. And you can also get other rewards in the game, such as perhaps you do something and then the princess falls in love with you, or you get a title, like mm-hmm. you become a baron.
Yeah.
Or perhaps you accomplish some goal that you had in that you saved your sister from the mobster and things like that. Or you can get treasure. Money, cold hard cash.
And if anyone's familiar with like computer role-playing games, it's the same kind of thing. You know, you have a mission, you complete those, that's winning. Or if you play World of Warcraft, then it's cash.
Well, another...
thank you.
I guess another common question, I get, is does everybody just... People have trouble visualizing mm-hmm. what actually happens when you sit down mm-hmm. to play the game. And because literally, what, do you just sit around and talk around a table?
I'd say easy answer, yes.
Well, in a sense, yes. But also, isn't that what you do for poker as well?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So, yes, then you do sit around with your friends and talk for a long time, but it's not just sitting and talking. There's actual playing and imagination and things like that.
Right. Well, I think one thing you do is to define what when you're talking, sometimes you talk in character. Mm-hmm. You're talking mm-hmm. as the character that you're playing, and sometimes you talk out of character. And that's basically when you're cracking jokes or talking about
rules,
Clash of the Titans, as we always do,
or
what we're going to have for dinner, or something like that, which we always do.
Cool.
I guess essentially you do just sit around the table and talk. Like sometimes you have a few props.
Well,
but
let's get into what actually is part of the game. I mean, sitting around talking, but usually a session will be everyone gathers together and whoever's mastering it will pick up, review the story from where you left off last time, review the setting from where you are, and then begin interacting in that world.
Yeah.
For example, in the Changeling game that you're running now, Wayne.
Which always needs a very long recap.
Because we get like 6 months between games. But for example... Where did we leave off the last time?
How will we use an example that even we can follow?
Yeah, right.
But said, I don't think you need a specific game example. Mm-hmm. You sit down, and after every people exchange the normal greetings and what's new and cracking wise about each other,
picking nits.
Somebody the referee then basically gives an overview of where you are now, and of course the players also participate in providing that recap mm-hmm. to see how much they know. And then you basically start the story. Okay, now you are in the cave, mm-hmm. And such is wounded, and what do you do?
Yeah,
and that's what happens. And people talk about what they do, and then the referee will explain how the environment, whether the environment is monsters or
some
antagonists
kind of conflict,
or allies.
Yeah, and if so, then you talk to it or you roll the dice and start shooting at it, whatever.
Yeah. And there is a lot of talking, and the dice is used basically to resolve those things that are just easier to resolve through dice as opposed to talking it out. And it's such as, like, you shoot a gun, because obviously when you're going to just say it, you say, I shoot a gun and I hit him in the head. I blow his head off. And you're like, well, okay, you do that a lot. So basically you roll the dice to see if you actually
do. Or do a tracheotomy or something.
Yeah, it's to see some sort of resolution to that action.
Yeah, basically.
But
a
lot of actions can just be talked out, such as I walk up to the hotel, the front desk at the hotel, and I ask if he's in, blah, blah, blah. And the referee will play the front desk clerk.
Yeah. I've explained it to other people in that you only use the dice when there's a chance that your actions could fail. So in other words, yeah, you don't have to roll dice to walk to the corner store or talk to someone, as Lyle said. Mm-hmm. You know, just when there's a chance of failure, whether it's because, you know, the thing you're doing is really difficult or, you know, you're trying to rush something, then the dice are what keep things fair.
And now, as far as what's on the table and in front of you, players will have their own dice, mm-hmm. so they're not borrowing off of each other. There'll be some of the books, probably system books, perhaps setting books if you're playing a specific setting. And there may or may not be like a board on the table that's generally only used for combat. Mm-hmm. So you can figure out where everybody is in the combat.
Laptop?
Sometimes.
Yeah, we kind of get to that when we talk about the future of gaming is how much computers are. Oh, what a clever seg. Unfortunately,
it wasn't until you made fun of it, jerk.
Unfortunately, you segged past all of these things. Generally, sometimes you're asked, do you dress up?
I don't know. I'm not asked that usually, but.
I got asked that.
Not on a daily basis.
It's like, hey, you dressed up?
Why have you come to work naked?
Dressing down. Do you dress? Stop. No up.
Because there is a segment of. There are people that do what we call live action role playing.
LARP.
Or LARP. And these are the people that dress up, and perhaps you might have seen them in the nightclub pretending to be vampires or pretending to be elves in the park at your city. Yeah. And that's a subgroup. Mm-hmm. They are role playing. The books that they'll buy that have the systems in them are a little bit different than the mm-hmm. ones like the pen and paper.
Yeah.
But I guess it's essentially the same thing, except it's one level up on acting, in that sort of you, instead of just saying what your character does or speaking with your character's voice, you actually act it out,
and you physically move in that. Whereas what we do, or is what most of the people who play pen and paper role playing games, is what they do is they sit around and don't physically act it out. What they'll do is perhaps change their voice, put on an accent.
Describe the action their character
perhaps
is
face
doing.
The facial reactions and that, but to be very your actual physical simulation is very limited.
And there is a different scope. Some people don't like doing that. We had one player a while back who would always refer to his character in the third person.
Yeah.
My guy, he does this action. Right. Whereas we have other people who will actually use a different voice and go full out acting on it,
right.
Not dressing up.
But yeah, generally most of the people who play role playing games don't do the dressing up. They don't meet in locations that people can see them.
Yeah, locations.
they probably meet in a basement, like a friend's basement or something like that,
nice office
where they can sit around a table and everybody is comfortable. Yeah. And nobody puts in fangs because they're playing a vampire. There's no biting. Although, I don't know, since I've never played these live-action role-playing games, I believe biting, you're not allowed to bite.
That's against the rules, right here in the book. Biting.
And they probably have to write that in the rules, because they're like, wah, wah, come on.
Yeah.
They do something else. I don't know. I couldn't explain that. But just to be clear, no dressing up.
No dressing up.
No. Chris, you were going into about the laptops, and
because
we talk about pen and paper role playing games, but what is the future? Because what we've been talking about is bringing in actual books and having physical dice,
actually making marks on your paper.
Yeah, and writing on having your character on a piece of paper.
Yeah,
and you make the adjustments with a pencil and eraser. But you mentioned laptops. Do you think that's the future of pen and paper role-playing games, or the role-playing games that we play?
Yeah.
All right, well, that's good.
Would you care to elaborate?
All print media is moving inexorably towards online, and everybody has a computer now, so why wouldn't gaming follow suit?
Right.
Absolutely. I've started putting, instead of printing out pictures for various characters within my stories, I put them on my iPod and just pass that around during the game now. There's no reason why you wouldn't. You can download all these systems and setting books on PDF now and read through them on your computer. I design all of my stuff inside the computer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can see the day eventually with
that. But you're seeing the future as... Okay, I cut you off. Go ahead.
I see it going further and further that way. With the new touchscreen technology, I see eventually where the combat board won't be a dry erase board or anything. It'll actually be a screen set on the table, and you can touch something and touch your enemy and see. It'll automatically tell you what hits. Dice might even disappear in the future. Yes.
You sound rather enthusiastic about that.
I do.
I might be the opposite.
Okay.
Where, yeah, like, a lot of my collection is PDFs. But, like, I do have a laptop, but I don't know, there's something about a book that it's just easier to flip through a book, a couple pages, flip real quick to find something. Or, yes, getting back to sort of that socialization, right? Part of the reason why I don't play those, like, World of Warcraft or online games is I don't want a computer screen between me and the people I'm interacting with. Mm-hmm. I like sort of the face-to-face interaction.
What if they were over Skype? If it was like a...
Yeah, I wouldn't like that.
Hmm. We actually tried that, Chris, and I don't know, but I really did not like that mm-hmm. at all.
I agree. It's much better being in the same room with a person. But yeah. That said, though, like we have difficult time pulling together three or four people for even once a month for a game if we open it up to the web.
But I think people have tried that, and it hasn't
taken off.
Thank you.
Really?
And I think there's a reason for that. And I think people don't want too much tech mm-hmm. in between their interactions with the people. And I know you're talking all about, like, instead of a book, you have an e-reader or a tablet computer,
yeah.
And you're flicking through. But, I mean, all they're doing is just simulating what's there.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's text, like, on a page.
So, yeah, you could put, like, dice on your computer, but, like, really? Is that really a big innovation when you could just have, like, a set of dice that you just roll on the table? I mean, how heavy are they to cart around?
Yeah, right.
I'll say this, like, the PDFs are much easier for storage purposes.
Yeah, how many times does your girlfriend tell you to throw out that PDF?
Now, yeah, what I think is the future of pen and paper, at least in the more immediate, and I'm seeing this in some of the games that are coming out, is a shift towards more rules light mm-hmm. games. And I'm basing this off, like, anecdotal, where people look at the massive books, and you plunk down one of these books, mm-hmm. in front of them when they can run like 200 to 300 to 400 pages long, or you were saying the Dresden Files book is 500?
400 and some, yeah.
400? And that's very intimidating. You're seeing the game that has the biggest market share, Dungeons & Dragons, has gone the angle where they'll just break it up into many little books. Mm-hmm. But then when I was in the bookstore the other week, looking at all the Dungeons & Dragons books, it was really hard to figure out which one to buy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you're supposed to buy all of them.
Well, yeah, that's the point.
Of course, that's their business model. Yeah. But it was really hard to figure out which one you could buy, whereas when you had the bigger book, you're like, oh, I buy this book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was very clear as far as a purchase decision, mm-hmm. is I buy this book and now I can play the game. But then you're like, man, that's a massive book. Yeah. I'm never going to be able to read this. Mm-hmm. And we've seen the reaction to a very hardcore, we'll say, board gamer, who we tried to get into one of our role-playing games, and we made the mistake of plunking down the book in front of him. Okay, let's pick your character.
Yeah.
And he just balked when he looked at that book.
Yeah, the reason we did too much. Normally we just chuck a rule book for a board game in front of him, and he says, let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we thought the same thing would happen with this role-playing game.
Yeah, so we chucked the it book was our bad.
And, we approached it the wrong way, and he said, you know what, I'm done. It's too much.
Yeah.
So
What I would think is going to happen is, smaller books, less rules, so there's more open-ended abstract. I think by smaller books, I mean thinner, like less pages, mm-hmm. as opposed to the paper, size. Yeah, the digest size.
Well, I can very much see that, because people who are in the game to just combat, kill stuff, and collect treasure, harder core of the gamists or power gamers, like mm-hmm. I said before, they can get those thrills in World of Warcraft, and they can do it easier and faster through that kind of game than you can at a table.
Right, so you don't need as many rules about...
You don't need any rules, you don't have to remember anything. Except maybe your hotkeys.
Then what are you selling as a book?
You're selling World of Warcraft. You're selling a software package. On the other hand would be people who are the dramatists and simulationists mm-hmm. who want to experience more than just clicking a button and slashing something or predefined quests that you do on several times over.
Right.
Those people would apply more to a pen and paper game, but it's a game that you don't need those thick rule sets for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can spend more time. If you were going to pad out the pages, you would pad it out with a very enticing setting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That can grab them. Perhaps I'm also seeing people incorporating more fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To help set even a game like Battletech, which is a science fiction, and that it uses the new rulebooks put in a lot of fiction because they think that's just a better way to sell the setting and to help to establish it.
That's one of BattleTech's strengths. It has a really strong setting too. So.
Yeah.
So most of the stuff would be setting as opposed to rules.
Yeah. But that said, like, I think universal systems are gaining popularity recently as well. GURPS has seen a bit of resurgence. Savage Worlds is a new one. Fate's kind of riding on the back of Dresden Files, but it's still getting more popular anyway.
What's a universal system?
A system that can be applied to any setting. Just a basic rule set that's variable and widely structured enough that you can fit it with anything.
So it's like a system devoid of a setting?
Yes.
It's kind of like only a system that says, here's the rules, maybe here's different options for different kinds of settings, but there's no setting attached to it.
Exactly.
I think they come back, just like
superhero games and that. Mm-hmm. I think they wax and wane in popularity. Mm-hmm. Universal rule sets. I mean, GURPS has been around since almost the beginning of the role-playing.
Yeah. I think maybe its resurgence recently has something to do with Dungeons & Dragons being so rules-heavy. Mm-hmm. People are looking for...
From what I hear on other places, GURPS can be pretty rules-heavy, too.
GURPS is actually pretty rules-heavy. Oh, is it? Okay. It's probably...
Maybe Savage Worlds is a better example than for that.
It's probably more intimidating. I would agree tying it into the D&D resurgence, but in a different way, in that when D&D brought about a bit of a resurgence in pen and paper role-playing about 10 or 11 years ago with their third edition game, they were encouraging different publishers to make settings and that incorporated their rule sets. Mm-hmm. And it worked, and it led to a resurgence in role-playing games. So I think people are like, oh, that was pretty cool, how they had one set of rules for all these different settings. Mm-hmm. So GURPS has always had one set of rules for all these different settings, and Savage Worlds has one set of rules in these different settings. Yeah. So that's where I see the link. So for the new gamer, or the new gamer, like we've sold them in this hour. So for the person...
So now that we've convinced you.
For the person who's been listening and perhaps is intrigued...
please log on to our website. We have a find a game on there.
There's that.
I think you were going to actually suggest kind of like a gateway game.
I
would suggest, like you said, I kind of evolved from board games.
Right.
I would suggest an adventure board game.
Really? Not. I was actually going to say, what role playing game would you recommend?
Yeah,
but
if you want to try role playing, go role playing, man.
No, I would actually say start with an adventure board game.
For example.
HeroQuest. Or RuneQuest.
Or Descent. Fantasy Flight Games.
Thank you. I was on the tip of my tongue.
I think that's actually still being sold.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
No, RuneQuest is as well. Yeah. Fantasy Flight.
Because it's a set of rules that will probably be more straightforward and maybe easier to understand than a typical role-playing game. And the characters are already made for you. Kind of, you already have a setting inside this box.
I think that's a good point about characters already being made, because a lot of the system is... We talked about combat, but I should point out, a lot of the system is how to make your character, how to give them skills and attributes like strength and intelligence. How high should it be?
Which can be quite daunting, from what I hear.
And that's what scared off our board gamer friend, is basically we just wanted to...
Yeah, we said
get him to make a character.
Make a character,
and he looked at all the rules to make that character.
And said, "Crap."
Yeah. So,
no thanks. Call me next time you play a board game.
So, an adventure board game, the character already made. Maybe there's a few very limited options to plug into your character to change him a little bit, but sort of all the work is done for you, and you can just play the game. Yeah. And then, so for example, a game like Arkham Horror, you can actually kind of add role playing on top of that.
Not really. Well, I liked your Descent.
Oh, okay, so I'll go back to Descent, right? There's nothing in the rules that say you're playing a barbarian character, act like a barbarian, right? There's nothing in the rules that say that for this board game.
But
you can do it, right? And I would see that as your
I would say like Descent is a better intro to a role-playing game than something like Arkham Horror.
Yes.
Because a lot of the things that they learn in that game, they'll be able to transfer over to a role-playing game.
Conversely, I'd recommend going and getting a copy of Savage Worlds. It's $10. It's really easy to learn.
That's
a
good.
Universal
yeah.
system. Read that. Find a movie you like. Grab a friend who also likes that movie and play a game. It's really that easy.
Is a really good, I think, business strategy, is to have like a $10 rule book and you just learn the rules. Or the pretty rules light.
Yeah.
So that's really good. There's a lot of other setting books out there that can help if you don't want to think of your own world. You can just say, I want to play superheroes, I'll play that. I want to play fantasy, I'll use this.
And I don't want to say that...
And it's a very, very small financial investment.
Yes. I don't want to imply that Savage Worlds is a superior system by any means. There's a lot of debate about that, but it's one of the easiest ones to get into to just try it out.
Mm-hmm. Also, this kind of actually looping back to why we even did this podcast topic in the first place.
Right.
Most role-playing game books, the first chapter is what is role-playing, or an introduction to role-playing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you could just kind of go out and buy a book and, you know, a completely new person could sort of read that first chapter and hopefully get a good idea of what was or what the game entails. Yeah.
Now, I'm going to recommend, even though maybe some of the stuff we said didn't really
make sense,
sell it, is Dungeons & Dragons. And the reason is because it'll be very easy to find other players.
That's true, too.
And yes, probably the best way to learn a game is people to teach it to you.
That's true.
And you probably don't even need to buy the book. You could probably go to a store, a game store that sells the books, as opposed to a bookstore that will sell the books, but a game store then will have like a bulletin board saying, or even people actually playing in the store. Mm. And you can just join and try it out. And I know Dungeons & Dragons promotes like D&D days or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're basically designed to introduce people to the game and that. And you may not like the actual game. You may not even love fantasy, but that kind of
community
and that, and you could talk to the people and say, well, yeah, I kind of like this. I kind of like playing an elven wizard, but you know what I really like? I really like Indiana Jones. I want to play that. And then maybe they also play that game. But Dungeons & Dragons is a great gateway game because everybody who's played role-playing games, gross generalization, but everybody who's played role-playing games has played Dungeons & Dragons. Yeah. And they still, most of the players do play it, even if they play other games like such as Savage Worlds or World of Darkness. They also play Dungeons and Dragons.
Every role player I know started on that as well.
Yeah,
I'll agree. Cause
and you say Savage Worlds has a $10 startup cost. D&D could have like a zero startup.
Yeah, a zero potentially. Yeah,
a zero startup cost because people are going to be able to find the players.
Yeah.
And they'll just say, oh, cool. And they'll probably be pretty stoked, especially if you're under 40. You'd probably be pretty stoked to get a little fresh blood into the hobby.
Yeah.
And they'll say, hey, we'll walk you through it. We'll help you do, you know, make up a character and, you know, it costs you nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
They probably won't even make you buy dice straight away, but you will eventually.
Yeah.
It's good etiquette.
Yeah,
I'll say, Dungeons & Dragons definitely has a good sort of organization in terms of sort of like
the. And they have a presence in the bookstore. Yeah. Like, I was recently, like, we're in Japan now, so the bookstores we go into have no role playing games. So we have to look at, like, Amazon or Maelstrom Games and that to buy our material. But I recently took a holiday in Florida and went and checked out the bookstore, and it was 4 shelves, and 3 of them are Dungeons & Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was one shelf that did have World of Darkness. And it did have Death Watch and Rogue Trader, of all things, which I was surprised, pleasantly surprised, but a surprise. And you can walk into the bookstore, open up the books, and have a look.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Dungeons & Dragons does a reasonably good job of having different levels of games. So they do have, they really try to promote these little box sets of, like, where it is a stripped-down version. Mm-hmm. Kind of like what Wayne was saying with this Descent or these war games, where they do, like, one step removed from the role-playing game.
Yeah.
The actual pen and paper role playing game, and it's more kind of like a real
kind of a board game. A lot of the game systems up there, you can just go onto their home website and just download a sample.
Sometimes you can download.
Well, you were mentioning GURPS, and we just kind of like, the rules are, it's pretty rules heavy, and actually it is pretty rules heavy. What we should say to about GURPS, because it is a great system, is that you can go onto their website, stevesjgames.com. And you can get GURPS Lite.
Yeah.
And it is their rule set for free. And the idea, then you can check out, while you're on the website, check out all the different settings that they have.
Hundreds and hundreds.
And we were talking before this episode, the writer of their mystery setting, or mysteries book, is a defense attorney who's on like some forensic organization. So the people that write the stuff actually know their stuff. So.
Well, you're talking specifically about GURPS.
Yeah, I'm talking about GURPS, because I was saying going on to that website.
Okay,
And I'm sure other games as well, you can go and get like a little sampler of their rule set, just because they want to sell the game. Yeah, and
some of them even have what's called a quick start rule set.
Yeah, where D&D it's kind has of, a little book.
Yeah, everything, like you said, very stripped down.
Including starter characters.
Including starting characters, maybe even like a starting adventure that almost kind of walks you through a little bit, like, says, make this roll at this time and succeed and pass. So,
if you don't have a hobby store near you, and where you can, you know, meet flesh and blood players and have them walk you through a game,
yeah.
and you can actually experience almost immediately how fun this hobby is.
And even though
then go online and get some of these free rule sets or go to the bookstore and thumb through some stuff.
Yeah.
And even though we didn't speak very highly of it before, if you are somewhere that you can't find another group, you know, there always is Skype and the internet to try and play through that.
Yeah, perhaps you'll be our Skype at one of our games.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
Thank you.
We hope that we explain some of the stuff that we, you know, role players talk about and that we mention in our episodes. Yeah. And if you are an experienced gamer, thanks for enduring this very basic episode.
We're going to get quite a few emails.
or if you found this very helpful, maybe write in with clarifications or...
Right. We have a forum on our website, www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. We have an email there, info@idleredhands.com, and a Facebook page as well. Please write in, comment, like us, and all that stuff. Please like us.
It made us sound desperate.
And coming up in future episodes, we'll be doing an episode on The Art of Seduction, which probably is going to sound a little bit creepy after we just explained that we're a bunch of guys sitting on the table.
About Jessica Alba.
We're also going to be looking at Wayne's Hollowed Earth Expedition, a pulp game, and our thoughts on that. And we'll also be looking at the pulp genre. If there's any other genres you'd like to see us cover, absolutely go onto our forums and...
Suggest one.
Or you can go onto our forum and respond to my very controversial question.
Attempt to get other people onto the forum.
Yeah. Well, take care.
Yeah, take care. Bye. Turn it.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.